want the view. The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue. Planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves, isn't this proof enough for us?
Today's Tuesday. It's the 25th of Jamadi al-Thani 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar. This is corresponding to the 25th of Azar 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar and the 16th of December 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. What a beautiful coincidence, 25th of Jamadi al-Thani and 25th of Azar. Five more days are to the end of autumn season in Islamic Republic of Iran and the start of winter. And the first month of winter in Iran is called the month of day. As usual, as regular, let's bless our day with the beautiful fragrance, with the beautiful taste of the verses of the Holy Quran for today, Surah Al-Isra, Ayah 24. Let's listen and then we'll continue our discussion. Do not go anywhere. Stay with us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Wa qada rabbuka alla ta'budu illa iyyahu wa bil walidayni ihsana. Imma yablughanna 'indaka al-kibra ahaduhuma aw kilahuma fala taqul lahumā uff fala taqul lahumā uff wa la tanharhumā wa qul lahumā qawlan karīmā.
And your Lord has decreed that you not worship except Him, and to parents good treatment, whether one or both of them reach old age while with you. Say not to them so much as, Uff, and do not repel them, but speak to them a noble word.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Welcome back. What you listened to was Surah Al-Isra, Ayah 24. Thanks for tuning in with the program today, special on Arab English Radio with me, Atta, the host of this program. In words and in deeds, try your best to be humble towards your parents. That's it. That's the tip for today. And that's the headline for today. By the phrase, lure unto them the wing of humility, which is literally mentioned in this ayah, it is the simile which refers to making oneself in the utmost sense of submissive gentleness towards one's parents. It makes one recall a bird which opens us its wings to provide shelter for its offspring. Never gaze straight into the eyes of your parents. Never talk to them directly. Always gaze down your head. Always put your head down. Always try to confirm them. Always try to respect them. Never try to say a murmuring bad sound. Oh, oh, af, ah, ooh, ee, sigh. Oh, I am tired today, Dad. Leave me. Oh, Mom, come on. Oh, Mom. Do not say such words. Never, ever. These are your parents. You have to respect them according to Islamic laws and Islamic teachings. The Almighty Allah thus proclaims to cover your parents gently under your love and generosity by providing them with shelter and care as they provided you with shelter and care when you were little. Now, what's the sad news? The sad news is that today, the people, the children, listen to me, they take their old parents to the old age houses. They take your parents to the elderly houses. They take their parents to rehabilitation centers. This is absolutely wrong. They leave them. They say that, okay, they will be over there with their old friends, having a good life, having good atmosphere over there, a nurse to feed them. No, 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 nothing will replace the love of the children for the old parents. Do not do that. Please do not do that. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not favor such actions.
Every morning I wake up and see the splendor of Allah's beauty. The sky at dawn, the silent trees. Praise be to Him, supreme is He. Praise be to Him, supreme is He. As I set to start my day, I think of Allah and I pray. His blessings are with me always. Praise be to Him, most kind is He. Praise be to Him, most kind is He.
Motherhood more than a job. A Muslim mother has a valued and dignified role. Her unparalleled gifts to the child have been aptly described by Imam Zain al-Abidin in Risalat al-Huquq, the Chapter of Rights. For your information, I would like to say that Risalat al-Huquq, or Treatise of Rights, is a book, of course a compilation, compiled by Imam Sajjad alayhi salam on different rights which are on shoulder regarding our environment, the animals around, neighbors, colleagues, friends, parents, teachers, pupils, children, everybody. So take a look at the English translation of that book. It is really, really beautiful. The hand of God removed you from her and brought you into this world. Then she was most happy, feeding you, forgetting her own hunger, clothing you even if she herself had no clothes, giving you milk and water, not caring for her own thirst, keeping you in the shade, even if she had to suffer from the heat of the sun, giving you every comfort with her own hardships, lulling you to sleep while keeping herself awake. The beautiful lullabies of the mothers when you were a child.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to another edition from series of today's special from Arab English Radio. This is Ali, your host, with another topic to discuss with you on motherhood. A good mother has outstanding qualities. No one can replace her in life of her children. Here we can mention some of the things which can make her so unique. The first is a deep love for her children. A mother's love is unmatched, whether young or old, healthy or handicapped, troublesome or obedient. The child is still beloved to the mother. This love may be displayed in various forms. Sometimes children misinterpret scoldings and rebukes to be a sign of lack of love. It is important to assure the child that he is always loved, even when his behavior warrants disciplinary measures. Such a child becomes confident and happy and will never seek solace elsewhere. The love of the mother becomes a source of happiness and peace at home. Children feel attached to the home because of the mother. IRIB English Radio. Recitation as well as translation of Quran.
وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا مُوسَى الْكِتَابَ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَهْتَدُونَ.
And we certainly gave Moses the scripture that perhaps they would be guided.
Short commentary of the Quran. Islamic issues.
Institution of the family in Islam is the most beloved by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
The life of the infallible. All in all, in today's special, IRIB English Radio.
Qualities of a mother. Model for the child. Many mothers think it's too great a burden to be acting near perfect all the time, even in the familiarity of their own homes. However, it is a good training. What mothers will change in themselves for the children will become a habit and will lead to a real change. It is not perfection that Islam demands from mothers, but a willingness to accept the responsibility of modeling good, acceptable behavior. This is an excuse young spouses today bring for having only one child. We want to go by perfection. No, nobody can be perfect. And one child does not make you as parents perfect, and your responsibilities will not be perfected toward one child. So one child policy is not a good policy. Many great people remember their mothers and the role they played in nurturing their greatness. Sayyid al-Razi, the compiler of Nahjul Balagha, mourned the death of his mother greatly. He wrote a poem for her in which he says, "Oh mother, I cry and shed tears for your separation, hoping that perhaps the burning drops of tears coming out of my sorrowful eyes may melt and remove the mountain of sadness from my heart. Oh mother, all are witness that you were an honorable and noble lady because you have handed over decent and noble children to society." Tips for Muslim mother. Today's tip: try to calm yourself in case of disobedience. Children are immature. That's why they are called children. So don't expect every decent and mature behavior from them. Things may go wrong at times, but you can sort them out and correct them with patience. You may expect your child to obey your command, but he or she may disobey. Now here, you have to prove yourself a very kind and nice Muslim mother, having a sitting with them and tell them the pros and cons of their bad action. Be patient and keep yourself calm inside situations. Patience is the key to any type of problem.
The second point that can be mentioned as one of the other qualities of a mother is sacrifice and dedication. A mother gives up a great deal for the sake of the child. She gives up her time, her sleep, her pleasure, and etc. to ensure that the child is all right. As Imam Zain al-Abidin salamullah alayhi says in his book Risalatul Huquq, mentioned that have been mentioned earlier in the beginning of this very show, nobody comes even close to doing what a mother does for her child. That is why he says that it is only with help of the Almighty that one can thank the mother for all her sacrifice and efforts. A good mother places the needs of the child, both physical and emotional needs, first. This is an important point to keep in mind, especially in these modern times. Women today are deluded by society into making their own careers and jobs more important than their homes. The home will always remain a woman's most valuable work, and that may require all types of sacrifice. It is not really a sacrifice, but is an investment which will reap great dividends.
thank you very much for being with us with today's special about motherhood and about parenting. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with me, Ata, the host of this program. For more information, don't forget to visit our website, iranradio.ir. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Till another episode, we leave you Allah's care. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami. La fata illa Ali, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi,
Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami.
La fata illa Ali, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami.
You can talk it down, turn the other way. Feel the truth, but it won't go away. Can you hear it calling? Yeah. You can write it down, but nobody cares. It's an untold story of our biggest fears. It can reach you with no warning. Yeah, yeah. When the sun goes down and there's nothing left around, can you feel it? Can you feel it? When your knees are on the ground, you may feel but it's allowed. Are you listening? 'Cause I need forgiving. There's a part of me that won't understand, having sleepless nights with my head in my hands. I'm here and tears are falling, yeah. If I could right the wrongs, would you lend me a hand? I would make a difference to this beautiful land. If I'm nothing, I have my intention. When the sun goes down and there's nothing left around, can you feel it? Can you feel it? When your knees are on the ground, you may fear but it's allowed. Are you listening? 'Cause I need forgiving. I need forgiveness.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. The Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his holy progeny, is quoted to have said, "The intention of a believer is better than his action." and the intention of a hypocrite is worse than his action. So what do you think it means? Think about it for a moment. The heart, the intention behind what we do can make a small act more valuable than a huge one. And sadly, a wrong intention can spoil even the grandest deeds. Let me give you an example. Imagine two people giving charity. One quietly gives a small amount, sincerely hoping to help and please Allah. The other gives a large sum, but mainly to be praised by others. On the surface, the second person seems more generous, but in truth, the first person's act carries a far greater spiritual weight because it comes from heart, from sincerity. And this isn't just spiritual wisdom, it's human psychology too. Studies show that acts of genuine kindness release feel-good chemicals in the brain, creating real joy for both the giver and the receiver. But if you act with selfish motives, it often backfires, creating tension, guilt, or even resentment. And deep within, you know that your act is worthless. So you would not be happy, really. And all those collapses and applauses of the people, they are just empty. This hadith also reminds us not to underestimate small acts. A smile to someone struggling, helping a neighbor, or sharing your time and knowledge, all these may seem minor, yet if done with the right intention, they are immensely valuable. It's the heart behind the action that counts. On the other hand, actions done with selfish or hollow intentions, no matter how impressive, can be harmful. A gesture performed for a show can breed pride, envy, or disappointment. It's like wrapping an empty gift, like beautiful on the outside but empty within. So how do we put this into practice? First, before acting, ask yourself, why am I doing this? Who am I really trying to please? And second, don't underestimate the small acts done sincerely. They ripple out in ways you may never see. And third, reflect regularly, purify your intentions, and strive to align your heart with your actions. So today, let's make a choice to act with sincerity, humility, and love. Let our hearts lead our hands, and let intention be the compass that guides every action. Because in the eyes of Allah, a good intention shines brighter than the grandest deed, and the corrupt intention darkens even the greatest actions. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish. This is the Heart of Life Pounding IRIB English Radio.
our storytellers who go beyond the boundaries of conventional filmmaking to capture the soul of reality, unveiling moments that are raw, unfiltered, and profoundly impactful. These filmmakers use their craft to explore the complexities of culture, history, and human emotion. My guest today is a documentary filmmaker who has dedicated his lens to capturing the untold stories of resilience, tradition, and transformation in a rapidly evolving world. He brings to light the perspectives and voices that might otherwise go unheard. Welcome to SORP. I am Bahman Murray, your host.
Zhang Zhong is a media personality whose creative work centers on three key pillars: preserving and promoting Chinese culture and traditions, such as Peking opera and other classical performances, exploring fundamental societal issues within China across diverse social layers, and fostering international collaborations, having worked with countries like North Korea, Iran, Japan, and France. His multifaceted approach reflects a deep commitment to cultural dialogue, social insight, and global exchange.
Mr. Zhang Zhong, it's a pleasure to have you on SORP.
I'm very happy to be your guest on this program.
Thank you. What first inspired you to pursue filmmaking and why documentary as your chosen game?
I was born in Western China. Actually, that's where I'm originally from. My neighbors were Muslim too. I moved to Beijing to study. Once I started school, I kept wondering what major I should choose. Eventually, I decided to study directing. I earned my bachelor's degree in directing, then went on to get a master's in cinema and a PhD in communications. After graduating, I worked in the technical field for quite a long time. Things like 3D technology and some 3D imaging techniques and similar areas. I wasn't doing any directing back then. It was about 10 years after graduation that I finally started working in directing.
Can you tell us about the first documentary you ever made?
Back when I was still studying, the first documentary I made was about Muslims, and it focused on one of the regions in Western China. In that area, the locals baked a kind of traditional bread. Actually, it's quite similar to the kind you find in Iran. Some of them also crafted small knives by hand. Using visuals and filming, I created a documentary about them. So, my first documentary told the story of two people, one who made knives and the other who baked traditional bread.
I want to know the role of your childhood and your upbringing in the vision and the style you chose for yourself as a filmmaker.
I think we all know that the source of creating any artistic work is real life. Everything comes from lived experiences. The films I make now, including documentaries, are all about the events and people around me. As we grow as individuals, we go through different phases: childhood, adolescence, youth, and middle age. And along the way, our feelings about life evolve. At the same time, we humans are constantly learning and progressing within society. These processes are exactly what we need to draw from life and express through visuals. Through imagery, we show the audience what the film is reflecting, its theme and ideas. I believe many films, especially documentaries, capture and mirror life. That's what a film is for a director. It's like their lens. I see it as a way for a director to document real life.
And what themes do you most pick for your documentaries?
My work mainly focuses on three areas. First, Chinese culture and traditions, things like Peking Opera and other traditional Chinese performances. Second, I pay attention to fundamental issues within China, meaning topics related to different layers of society and their core content. Third, I focus on international collaborations. In the beginning, I worked with North Korea and Iran, and now I collaborate with Japan, France, and other countries. Overall, my creativity and body of work revolve around these three pillars.
And which films of yours do you think represents your artistic style the best way?
Well, of course, it's related to the film Chang'an, Chang'an, which I made 3 years ago in collaboration with Iran. I really love this film, and I believe that both in terms of cinematography and production, as well as its concept and artistic vision, it stands as a successful international work. So, yes, I'm very proud of it.
I'm going to talk a little bit about censorship and challenges. Have you ever faced censorship in your work and in your career?
I think every country has its own rules, guidelines, and management style when it comes to filmmaking. China is no different. Actually, the whole world is like that. But personally, I feel that filming and making movies in China is quite free, especially for someone like me, who may not know many people but can still go out and shoot. It feels very open. I can choose the topics I'm interested in, and I don't really face any major obstacles.
And I want to ask you a question regarding, you talked about a co-production with Iran, with Nagis Abia, a very famous filmmaker. How was that experience, and how did you come up with the idea?
I have deep admiration for Iranian filmmakers, the directors, writers, behind-the-scenes crew, and their teams. They manage to create truly remarkable films within a very limited environment and under a fairly strict regulatory system. Iranian films, whether feature films, documentaries, or TV series, often receive numerous awards on the international stage. So I've learned a lot from them, especially through my collaboration with director Narges Abyar on this film. In this project, she was the writer, producer, assistant director, and also the production manager on the Iranian side. I completed the filming in China, and then we worked on editing, sound design, color correction, and final production in Iran. The Iranian crew worked with incredible precision and attention to detail, and their dedication and persistence in the art had a profound impact on my own creativity. The film is currently being screened, and so far we've participated in over 30 international festivals and received several awards.
Well, in a conversation that we had before, you said that the name of the film, the title of the film, was the name of a very little town in China. What was the story about that? How could you find common grounds with an Iranian culture in order to make that film with Narges Abyar?
We all know that China and Iran are civilizations with deep ancient roots, nearly 2,000 years of history. Back then, we had discussions about why we should name the film Chang'an, Chang'an. The name Chang'an refers to one of China's most prosperous cities during the Tang Dynasty, which is why it was chosen. At that time, Chang'an referred to the historical city from the Tang era, which today is known as Xi'an, the same historic Chang'an. Silk and Chinese porcelain were brought into Iran via the Silk Road, and in return, Persian carpets, rugs, pomegranates, and agricultural products were sent to China along that same route. So, from ancient times, China and Iran have had ongoing cultural and economic exchanges. We blended East and West, combining the historical Chang'an of China with modern-day Xi'an, and that's how the name came to be. Initially, director Ms. Nargis Abyar named the film Chang'an, and her intention was to highlight the Silk Road, the path that connected China and Iran, flowing both ways, from China to Iran and from Iran to China.
Right, and my final question regarding that film is that, has it ever been publicly screened in China? I want to know the reaction of a Chinese audience to that film.
The film premiered in China and included expert panels and special screenings designed to gather different perspectives. It was well received by the Chinese government, local media, and audiences alike. There was also a special screening in Xi'an as part of the Silk Road Film Festival, where around 1,500 young people watched the film. They gave us a warm applause and shared really positive feedback.
Getting back to the creative process of making a documentary or even a feature film, as is your specialty, how do you approach research and storytelling for your projects?
We all know that working on a project is no easy task. From the moment an idea forms in your mind and you begin to shape it, then turn it into a script, move on to filming, and finally complete it. It's a lot like giving birth to a child. Every stage of the process involves both thought and action, each with its own rhythm. In this journey, you start from nothing and gradually, step by step, you build it. It's almost like creating a human being. At first, there's nothing, but slowly it grows and transforms into a complete work of art.
Can you describe the collaborative process with your team during production? Because, of course, cinema and filmmaking is a teamwork. Even a small documentary, you need a really, really well-coordinated team with you. How do you do that? How do you manage the team?
No film, whether it's a documentary, a feature, or a television production, can be made by just one person. Especially in China, when I'm making a film, I never list myself as the sole director, even when preparing subtitles. That's because creating a film is never a one-person job. It takes a strong team to bring a project to completion, just like this interview. There are many people working behind the scenes, even though the audience only sees the two of us. That's why teamwork is so important. Over the course of my 20-year career, we've assembled many different teams to create various films, and every single one has required collective effort, not just the work of one individual.
And, of course, what techniques do you use to ensure the authenticity and connection with your subjects? How do you stay true to the subject that you pick to work with?
When I make a film, there are often many celebrities involved, but there's also another group, just normal people, especially when it comes to documentaries. We have to make sure the footage feels genuine and authentic. To do that, we use different techniques. Sometimes we rely on discreet filming to capture real moments in people's lives. It's also important to treat the subjects of the film like family, with warmth and respect, so they forget the camera is even there. That way, they stop noticing the lights and microphones and just act naturally. This helps us capture raw, first-hand footage. Moments so real that even the subjects themselves might forget they're being filmed. Many of these scenes truly document real life.
Regarding that, we have, of course, you know, different schools of documentary filmmaking. There is a school who believes that a documentary maker must act like a fly on the wall and just witness and record everything as they are, as they happen in the moment. But there is also another school of thought in documentary making that says that you need to be proactive with your subject. You need to be always even meddle with the story of the subject for the better. Try to like help them find ways to better their situations and everything. I want to know which school exactly you belong with.
I enjoy both styles, but personally, I lean more towards capturing reality. I believe we shouldn't interfere with the lives of the people we're filming. That's why this kind of footage feels more authentic and genuine. During this film festival, I've watched many short films and documentaries, and I think the most powerful images are the ones that are real. As directors, we have to decide how much we want to intervene in our subjects' lives or guide their path. Because in the end, we are creating a work of art. That's why I agree with the idea that non-fiction documentaries, especially those that don't use professional actors and instead portray ordinary people, sometimes require a bit of directorial intervention to make the final piece more impactful and relatable. That kind of involvement plays a very important role in shaping the final work.
Mr. Jean-Jean, once again, thank you so much for taking the time and coming to Seoul. And thank you guys for staying with us on another conversation. This is Seoul. Until next time, it's goodbye from the back of the world.
Welcome, dear listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran, and I'm your host for the next hour. Hope you will accompany us into the early hours of this morning. We'll start this hour's lineup with Let's Recite the Quran. The program teaches eloquent recitation of the Quran at level 2. After that, we have Islamic upbringing. The program aims to answer frequently asked questions about children and adolescents and their upbringing. Israel Watch will follow next. The program aims to examine and criticize reports and analysis by Israeli media on current events and issues in West Asia region. And the Ocean of Da'a is our final program this hour. The program gives an explanation of supplications taken from various books such as Mafatihul Jinan and Kamilu Ziyarat. Stay with us for the next hour.
Let's recite the Quran.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Welcome to this episode of Let's Recite the Quran, dear listeners. My name is Muhammad, and with me today we only have two brothers in the studio, Brother Hassan and Brother Masoom. Assalamu alaikum, brothers.
Alaikum salam.
How are you doing today?
Alhamdulillah.
Energetic? A happy day for the Quran. Yeah?
Yes.
Dear listeners, we have now completed, up until this episode, Alhamdulillah, we have completed the recitation of verses 1 through 9 of Suratul Jinn, chapter number 72 of this noble Quran. However, in this episode, inshallah, we will be continuing the recitation of this same chapter from verse number 10 of this chapter. Brother Hassan, I'll kindly ask you to please take the honors of reciting verse number 10 of Suratul Jinn. Bismillah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وأنا لا ندري أشر نريد بمن في الأرض أم أراد بهم ربهم رشدا.
أحسنتم. A very beautiful and confident recitation. Now, let's go for some of the points regarding this verse, tajweedi points. The first one is the ghunna on the wa'anna, right? This ghunna, we apply ghunna again, by the way, dear listeners. Ghunna is a nasal sound and a very small stretch, up to two counts. Wa'anna, correct? Whenever we have noon with a tashdeed, we apply ghunna on that noon. وَأَنَّا لَا نَدْرِي نَدْرِي. Now this is another ruling called قَلْقَلَ, and we did mention this quite a few times in the previous episode as well. نَدْرِي, whenever we have قُطُب جَد, the letters قُطُب جَد, قَاف, طَا, بَا, جِيم, and دَال, any of these letters when they have سُكُون on them, when they're ساكن, we apply the ruling of قلقلة. The ruling of قلقلة basically says that whenever we have any of these letters and they're ساكن and they have سكون, we echo them instead of giving just a flat ending or a flat سكون to them. Originally, it would have been لا ندري, right? However, after applying the ruling of قلقلة, we say لا ندري, ندري, ندري. You see the difference? At the end of this nadri, we have a mad. Brother Hassan, can you explain to us what kind of a mad is this, and how many stretches should we apply to this mad?
So this is a wajib mad?
This is not a wajib mad.
Oh, yes, because the hamza is separate from it.
Exactly. So the hamza that comes afterwards is actually a hamza that is for the beginning of the next word. It's not in the same word, right? So this is jaiz munfasil.
Yes.
Now this jaiz means how many counts are we allowed to recite? How many counts or how many beats are we allowed to stretch this med?
Two or four
mm-hmm.
counts.
Two or?
Four counts.
Two, four, or even six.
Six.
It's
yes,
up to you.
Yes.
But consistency is important. Make sure that whenever you find jaiz munfasil, if you have decided to apply two counts for all the other jaiz munfasil.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you're applying four counts, do the same for all the other jaiz munfasil. And if you're applying six counts, do it for all the others. Although being inconsistent is not illegal per se, right? You won't be scolded for it. It's not a sin. But being consistent makes your recitation much better. The reader will be able to understand where you're doing jaiz munfasil and where you're doing wajib muttasil. Correct? وَأَنَّا لَا نَدْرِي أَشَرٌ. Okay? This ra should be recited with tafkheen because there is a dhamma or tadmeen dhamma on top of ra. Right? Whenever ra comes with fatha or dhamma, it should be recited with tafkheen. Tafkheen basically means a rounded mouth and a heavy voice. أَشَرٌ. Right? أريد بمن في الأرض. Brother Hassan, can you tell me why I recited بمن في الأرض instead of بمن في الأرض?
You applied the rule إخفاء on the
noon. The ruling of إخفاء on the noon at the end of بمن, correct?
Yes.
So we have a noon followed by the letter fa in this case. Whenever we have a nun sakin or tanween, which actually, in reality, tanween is also a nun sakin at the end of it, right? And then followed by any of the tongue or mouth letters, for example, in this case, fa. Fa is one of the tongue letters or the mouth letters, right? Biman fil ardi. We apply the ruling of ikhfa. Ikhfa basically means hiding the sound of a nun, silencing the sound of a nun, and applying ghunna. Ghunna, again, as we said at the beginning of this verse, it is a nasal sound and a small stretch up to two counts. So in this case, also keep in mind, a ruling of thumb is that for ikhfa, you prepare for the recitation of the coming letter. You prepare your mouth for the recitation. Although the listeners, the dear listeners of this episode, won't be able to see my mouth, but the brothers can attest and bear witness to how I'm doing it, right? Look up my lip, the bottom lip. I'm preparing for the recitation of fa. لِمَن فِي الْأَرْضِ. You see that?
Yes.
Right. You apply the ghunna with ikhfa. بِمَن فِي الْأَرْضِ أَمْ أَرَادَ بِهِمْ رَبُّهُمْ رَشَدًا. Keep in mind, all the ras that we recited so far are tafkheem ras, because all of them either have a fatha on them or a fatha before them. Whenever we have ra, either we have a fatha or dhamma on top of them, we apply tafkheem. If it's kasra, we apply tarqiq. If it's sukoon now, we look at the harakat or the vowel before that ra, which is sakin, right? We look at the harakat before it. If it's fatha or dhamma, again, the ra becomes tafkheem.
Mm-hmm.
If it is kasra, it is tarqiq, okay? Again, tafkheem and tarqiq, the difference is that tafkheem, you round your mouth and you give a heavy voice. And tarqiq, you flatten your mouth, you put a smile on your face, you flatten your mouth, and you give a flat and default recitation and the pronunciation of that letter. All right, so we have given a lot of time to verse number 10 of this chapter.
And we do not know, therefore, whether evil is intended for those on earth, or whether their Lord intends for them a right course.
How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran?
تحفظني من همزات الشيطان ومن زلاتي.
be with Let's Recite the Quran.
I'll ask Brother Ma'asoon to please take the honor of reciting verse number 11 of chapter number 72, Suratul Jinn of the Noble Quran. Brother Ma'asoon?
Yes. وَأَنَّا مِنَّا الصَّالِحُونَ وَمِنَّا دُونَ ذَلِكَ كُنَّا طَرَائِقَ قِدَدًا.
أحسنتم. A very beautiful recitation. Again, the غُنَّة on the أَنَّا مِنَّا, just like the previous verse, right? Or the verse before that, I'm sorry, verse number 9. Verse number 9 says, وَأَنَّا كُنَّا to Nun al-Mushadda, right? Likewise, in the verse number 11, we have وَأَنَّ مِنَّ. We apply غُنَّ for both the Nun that have Shadda on them. الصالحون. First of all, حروف الشمس, we don't say الصالحون. It's الصالحون. And then we have تفخيم of صاد, right? Rounded mouth and heavy voice. وَأَنَّ مِنَّ الصَّالِحُونَ. Correct? And then again, غُنَّة in the وَمِنَّ. غُنَّة basically means a nasal sound and a little bit of a stretch, two counts. دُونَ ذَلِك. There is a waqf on ذَلِك. Correct? Right,
yes.
Brother Masoom, what kind of a waqf is this? What kind of a stopping sign is this?
It indicates that we can make a pause, but it's better to continue.
Exactly.
Salah.
Very good. So in the Uthman Taha text of the Quran, we find Salah, Salam, and Ya, right? At the top, at the end of Thalik, right? Now this basically says that it is better, as you said, Brother Masoom, it's better to continue, but you can stop. This is a place of waqf, you can stop. If you were to stop, it would become Wa minna duna thalik kunna tara'iq, correct? But if you were to continue, how would you recite, Brother Masoom?
وَمِنَّا دُونَ ذَلِكَ كُنَّا طَرَائِقُ.
أحسنتم. And the طَرَائِق, keep in mind the law over here is of تَفْخِيم, not طَرَائِق. طَرَائِق. Correct?